Having discussed important focuses of attack and the need for massive resistance in relation to academia and its larger implications, let's step back a bit and situate this in a broader context. First of all, we can sort of say flatly that the whole concept of balance in academia, which is one of the weapons with which dissent and critical thinking in academia is being attacked, this whole concept is basically bullshit, an erroneous concept, and one that's not achievable, not desirable, and not achievable. What does it mean to have balance, for example, in the sciences? Here we can get back to the question of evolution. Now, if this is raised to mean that there should be the contestation of opposing views, yes. But the notion that there should be or could be some sort of balance, what would it mean and who would judge what it is and how would it be determined and maintained? This is merely a stalking horse to claim, once again, that there's a left-wing dictatorship. But even beyond that, as a concept itself, it's incorrect and unworkable and not the right way to go about the question. What should be pursued in general and in academia in a concentrated way? What should be encouraged, first of all, is intellectual ferment and the clash of ideas, and what should be pursued is it arriving at a correct understanding of things, and to invoke what has become a controversial word, perhaps even for some a chilling word, truth. Now here we do get back once again to the John Stuart Mill point in relation to the desirability and the need not only to allow but to encourage intellectual ferment and the clash of ideas. It is important, once again, as part of this process, for people to hear ideas, and this is applicable in academia, but not only there, and much more generally, to hear ideas presented by their most ardent advocates, and not simply as they are characterized, even fairly characterized, by those who oppose them. But this is a very different matter than balance, than trying to strive for some sort of unattainable and, frankly, erroneous concept of balance. The point is to have the contestation of ideas, which does have value in its own right, but also to arrive at a correct understanding, as I said. Now, as I pointed out before, this is very different than an idea also championed by the likes of Mill, the free marketplace of ideas. Now, as I pointed out in the talk Communism and Jeffersonian Democracy, and as I spoke to in the book Democracy, Can't We Do Better Than That, what this notion of the free marketplace of ideas amounts to, what it actually corresponds to in the real world, as they say, and works out to and ends up in and serves, is not the equal contestation of ideas and their winning out according to some rationalist notion of the truth will out. But what results is what results in every other sphere of a society dominated by an exploiting class, and in the confines of capitalism in particular and its underlying dynamics of accumulation and production relations and its superstructure, what works out in the free marketplace of ideas in reality is what works out in general under capitalism, the domination of the ideas that overwhelmingly that correspond to and serve and reflect the viewpoint of the ruling class. Goes back to Marx and Engels' statement that the ideas of any age are ever the ideas of the ruling class. Now, that's not true because Marx and Engels said it. Marx and Engels said it because it's true. It concentrates truth. And if you look at actually how things work out and what ideas actually dominate in academia, in the media, in the culture generally, you can see very clearly, if you examine them, that they reflect and in turn serve the interests of the ruling class and the system of which they are themselves conscious expression and representation. So what works out through the so-called free marketplace of ideas is domination by a class in the realm of ideas and the molding of public opinion, and that's not what we're aiming for. Is the free marketplace of ideas and the working out of that free marketplace. And I'll talk about, under the dictatorship of the proletariat and under communist society, what it is we are actually aiming for and how it's radically and qualitatively different than the whole concept of the free marketplace of ideas and what that ends up in. But even before getting to the dictatorship of the proletariat, and as part of building a struggle for that objective, what we should be promoting in relation to the sphere of education and academia is intellectual ferment, the clash of ideas, and the search for the truth. That's what we should be arguing that education and fighting for education to be about, even while it will never be that in any full sense under this system. But whether it's over the question of evolution or over the question of what's the actual history of the U.S. and what has its role been in the world, as opposed to notions of balance or relativist notions of different narratives, we should be putting forward boldly. But yes, we need intellectual ferment and the class and contestation of ideas, but the objective is to get to the truth about this, and there is the basis to get to the truth. And getting to the truth is not some frightening prospect invoking specters of totalitarianism. My God, if you'll pardon the expression, if you can only associate the truth with totalitarianism, you're in a world of hurt. So as opposed to notions of balance, we should be promoting and struggling for the idea that the purpose is to, yes, thrash things out, to have intellectual ferment, to have the implementation of the correct aspect of John Stuart Mill, have ideas presented by their ardent advocates, and yes, have room for people to challenge the accepted norms, narratives, and conventions about what history is or what's true in any sphere, including the sciences. Now, I said it at another time that I'm sick and tired of these creationists, and it's time for them to shut up. That's not because there's not a need and room for a lot of debate and wrangling about evolution, but it needs to go on in the context or on the foundation of a well-established truth that evolution is a firmly established fact. Now let's debate about the mechanisms of that evolution. There are times when you do have to close the debate. You can't endlessly argue about everything. There aren't endless productive forces. There aren't endless means of communication and dissemination of ideas. And you can't have everything unsettled all the time, or you can't do any good for anything. And when, through the application of a scientific method and, yes, rational thought, you can firmly establish something to be true, then you have to proceed on the basis of that being true and develop debate on that in that framework and on that foundation and in that context. There's always for ongoing debate. Eldridge and Gould brought forward the idea or systematized an explanation of punctuated equilibrium in relation to evolution. That's a debate about how does the process and what are the mechanisms through which evolution takes place. There's lots of need and room for that kind of debate. New fossils are discovered. They're always rearranging the hominid lineup, so to speak, because new fossils are always discovered. There's plenty of room for wrangling about where should this one be situated in relation to that one. In every sphere of science, there are always new discoveries that upset the apple cart, that overturn accepted ideas. Even sometimes foundational ideas, but that has to be on the basis of, first of all, proceeding with a scientific method, aiming for and with a methodology that can arrive at the truth, and second of all, It has to proceed through stages or phases. You can't have everything up for grabs all the time. Those things that can be determined to be true have to be acted upon as true, as I said in another context, and then you have to have an open mind about those very things that you're firmly convinced are true and are acting upon as true, in case new evidence does arise, or new argumentation marshaling the evidence that exists in a different way, which would challenge that. But that's not what creationism does, for example. It doesn't marshal scientific evidence. Its so-called evidence is pseudo-evidence or non-evidence. How would you prove, what is a proof of intelligent design? No one who advocates intelligent design can offer a proof, and more specifically, can identify anything which these advocates would accept as definitively disproving intelligent design. There is nothing you can do through the scientific method that would, in the minds of its advocates, disprove intelligent design, which tells you right away it is not a scientific theory. And things which are contrary to science don't belong in science. And ideas that have been proven from many different directions and over a whole period of time by mutually reinforcing means to be wrong do not deserve equal time with ones that have been proven by the same process and methods to be true. Or else we could never get anywhere and society would come apart. Imagine if over every question that we had of settled question of science, we had the same kind of turmoil that there is now about evolution. Society could not function. Any society, not just this bourgeois society, but any society could not function in that kind of a way. So we need an education, an approach to education that involves as its core the search for a correct understanding of reality. And for educating people in a correct understanding of reality and in the methods, including critical thinking, which enable people to arrive at a correct understanding of reality. So this is very different than the notion of truth as a dogma. Truth as a set of a priori, arrived at in advance of engaging reality, ideas. It's the opposite of, as well as a priorism, proceeding in advance with ideas that you seek to impose on reality. It's also the opposite of instrumentalism, which is closely akin to a priorism, where you have certain objectives, and you, in your mind, and in the way you seek to proceed, and in the way you seek to impose thinking on others, you bend and twist and contort and torture reality to make it conform to those objectives, to be an instrument of your objectives, rather than engaging reality, accumulating knowledge on a certain level. Broadly speaking, what Mao referred to as perceptual knowledge through experimentation, engaging in reality, accumulating experience, and then making a leap to abstract and to synthesize that into a higher conceptual level of knowledge about reality, and then return it again to reality to test it and to further develop it in an ongoing cycle or an ongoing spiral. This methodology is directly opposed to either treating truth as a dogma, or relatedly, to approaching reality with a priorism and instrumentalism. And not just in the future, but now we need to be fighting in the realm of epistemology. You know, what do we mean by epistemology? Theory of knowledge. What is the truth? How do human beings arrive at an understanding of the truth? Can human beings arrive at an understanding of reality that correctly reflects reality? These are questions of epistemology. And as I've been repeatedly and emphatically speaking to, this is a crucial arena of struggle now over different visions of how society ought to be, very sharply posed now, but with implications for the whole future of humanity and for what direction society and humanity should and can take. We do not believe in, and we must not apply an approach of truth as an organizing principle, as Lenin criticized it in his philosophical essay, Materialism and Imperial Criticism. That's what came through, for example, what comes through in what I criticize from Karen Armstrong's discussion of myth. If myth has certain effects on us, then it's valid, which is the same as true. That is an approach, that's the approach that Lenin characterizes truth as an organizing principle. And that will not lead us and not lead humanity where we need to go. For one thing, it will lead you to run into, and sooner or later, rather explosively, metaphorically speaking, rather explosively run into reality. Because while you, as that Bush official said to Ron Suskind, while you think you're going off creating reality, even though, with the power you have, you can change certain aspects of reality and bring certain new things into being, there's a larger reality that that's part of. There are more fundamental things going on and driving reality than what even the most powerful force as represented today by the U.S. ruling class, can do. There is still a larger material reality, a larger necessity. And by reconstructing reality to fit a certain narrative of whatever kind, utopian, a narrative of imperial conquest, or whatever it might be, you are setting yourself and others on whom this is imposed up for explosive confrontation with actual reality. And by the way, in that resides also the possibility of radical transformation of reality in a positive direction. That can be one factor contributing in a major way to that. But not if we don't, to put it that way, go to work on all this. Not if we have a passive attitude toward this, and not if we fall into applying the same or similar methods in terms in general, or specifically in terms of what we're fighting for, in terms of how we present what education, in the broad sense, should be all about, and what the search for the truth, in an even more fundamental sense, should be all about. So we don't need the truth as dogma, and we don't need the truth as relativism and competing narratives. So what is and what should be the communist approach? Well, I've touched on this in speaking about the promotion of intellectual ferment and the search for the truth. But let's look at it even now, before there's been a revolutionary seizure of power by masses of people rising up. Even now, our approach should be the same as it needs to be, and which can be much more fully expressed under a new form of state power with a new system. An epistemological approach, a philosophical approach, an overall ideological approach of, yes, engaging reality and understanding very deeply the point that's concentrated in the statement that all truths are good for the proletariat. Everything that is actually true will help us get to communism. And this we should be not only taking up and applying ourselves, but popularizing and struggling for with other people, even those who are not yet won to the objective of communism. Nevertheless, we should be struggling in the epistemological realm and in the realm of education specifically, that the point is to go after a correct understanding of reality. And yes, to have lots of intellectual ferment, because it's important in its own right in terms of the kind of atmosphere we want to have, but it's also important in terms of arriving at the whole process, the kind of rich process that's necessary to wrangle through and synthesize repeatedly a more developed and deeper understanding of reality. And this is what we should promote, not only in general, even now, still under the domination of the current system, and even recognizing that this can't be fully realized under this system, but more specifically, this is what we should be promoting and popularizing and fighting for in the context of waging a determined battle to defend dissent and critical thinking in general in society and specifically in academia. When questions come up to us in relation to this battle, well, what about you? Wouldn't you just do the same thing the Bushites are doing? Isn't it hypocritical of you to complain about the imposition of an agenda and a narrative when that's exactly what you'd do? No. It's not exactly what we do. It's not even what we do, not exactly. And no, it's not the correct method. We are not going to repeat the experience of Lyshenko in the Soviet Union and similar experiences where, in an instrumentalist fashion, things were accepted as true about basic facts of biology and their application, which were not true because they seemed to be convenient and seemed to be a shortcut to desired and, yes, much-needed results. No, we're not going to repeat those errors because they don't take us where we need to go and where we're striving and bringing forward masses of people to struggle to go. So once again, here in the epistemological realm, as well as more generally, there's a need for the application of solid core with a lot of elasticity. Taking the correct methodology and applying it in a consistent way while being open even to recognizing that your understanding of or even the content of some of that may need to change over time if it's shown to be lacking and out of step with and out of accord with reality and the means for engaging reality and to get at the essence of reality most fully. And a solid core in the sense of firmly grasping those things that have been through many different means and by mutually reinforcing means shown to be true and which can be taken as true on that scientific basis and therefore have to be acted upon and taken out into reality to change reality on that foundation. At the same time, recognizing not only is it important to have a broad clash of views and ideas, but even within our own thinking, to be open, to have space, room for the atoms to move around, to have space for the recognition that our thinking about particular things, even about essential things, while we're acting on it as true, being open to the fact that it might not be true in every aspect, or even it may turn out, may not be essentially true. And that's a difficult dialectic to handle, but that's what we have to take up and apply ourselves, and that's what we have to struggle for and popularize for other people to take up. You know, there's kind of a interesting example in the Conversations book that I did with Bill Martin. He has a lot of overlap of agreement with our view on things and with Marxism, and then he has areas of disagreement and criticism. And we had a very rich exchange, which was, you know, some people comment on this, was not what is frequently involved in books of exchange between people where we each sort of had our territory clearly demarcated, and then it was sort of like, even if in a friendly way, firing salvos from our respective fortresses back and forth. But we were actually engaging each other. And things, while I was doing my very best to proceed from the point of view of the communist outlook and methodology, there was things that he was raising about that outlook and methodology and its application, which were causing me, right in the course of the conversation, to rethink certain things. And that's still going on in my mind. And that should be the process, should be happening with others. It didn't cause me to become an agnostic. It didn't cause me to say, well, now that you brought up these things, I'm not so sure that I should really be a communist after all. I'm not really sure that this world outlook and methodology really does get at reality in the most consistent and systematic way if it's applied, you know, to the more that it's correctly applied. But it raised the question, are there holes in here. There are always contradictions in everything. In that sense, always holes. Or else life would stop and thinking would stop. And the acquisition of knowledge and understanding reality and therefore being able to transform reality would stop. And this is the kind of understanding we have to have and struggle for even now. And what about the future society? Well, once again, it will require the application of this basic approach of solid core with a lot of elasticity in all kinds of dimensions, as both an epistemological as well as a political principle. The truth is a truth, but there will be struggle in the future society, just as there is now, over first of all recognizing and then applying truths. And this will be true not only in the transition to communism, but in communist society itself, in some ways in an even fuller sense. So even in communist society, this will be a vital part of humanity continuing to advance. This is pointed to and discussed from a number of angles in different parts of the Observations book, Observations on Art and Culture, Science and Philosophy. Now let me just, to illustrate the principle here and how it might be applied, let me just talk about it in relation to a few different spheres of society looking to the future. For example, in the sphere of education, yes, there needs to be a core curriculum. You can't have an educational system without a core curriculum. Now, it shouldn't be dogma, and it shouldn't be closed to change, but you have to have a core curriculum. Should dialectical materialism be taught as the correct means for engaging reality as part of that curriculum? Yes. Should people be allowed, for example, in universities, to argue that dialectical materialism is not the correct method for engaging reality? Yes. That's an application of solid core elasticity. It doesn't mean they're going to be given equal time and equal weight. There's a core curriculum, but people should be able to raise dissent, and they should be able to question not only aspects of the application, but the philosophy itself. And there should be battle over that, wrangling over that. More broadly, there needs to be, should a history be taught a certain way? Should there be a core curriculum which explains what the actual history of key aspects of human history have been? Yes, according to the best understanding that can be developed by applying this outlook and methodology. Should people be able, both in books that are written and courses that are taught, to challenge that understanding of history, to raise criticism and disagreements? Yes, solid core and elasticity. Should the library stacks only have books by Marxists? No. Should the media, should the educational system, should the library system give priority to things that apply this world outlook and methodology in the course of a dictatorship of the proletariat? Yes. Should nothing else be allowed in the libraries, even things contrary to it, or in the media, or in the culture? No. This is a complex process, and there's a lot more to be worked out, and here I'm merely speaking to the principles. But you do have to have, in terms of the media, in terms of the educational system, including in terms of every sphere and dimension of society, you have to have a solid core, and you have to have elasticity, both in the philosophical and specifically epistemological dimension and in the political dimension, in terms of what's allowed and encouraged and, if you will, the rights of people in those spheres and what space is made for what in those spheres. And we need in the educational system and in general, along with solid core with a lot of elasticity, the application in a living way of the principle that Mao articulated in a very full way and rich way of that communism embraces but does not replace all the different spheres of human activity, endeavor, and knowledge. And there has to be room for scientific experimentation and for artistic innovation. within the educational system, within the media and culture, and generally in society, that does not directly contribute to, does not even necessarily reinforce in any kind of direct way what is the solid core, what is the main emphasis being given, but which may run independently of it for quite some time, or may even run counter to it. And if you really understand the point about how all truths are good for the proletariat and everything that is actually true will lead to communism, then you understand the importance of this and, in a strategic sense, the necessity and positive nature of all this. And you understand how repeatedly you will be brought to the brink of being drawn and quartered. But this is the kind of educational system, and this is the kind of society broadly that we should be envisioning and should be fighting for and should be wrangling and struggling even now with others over, even while we unite and bring forward broad numbers of people in the universities, not only among the faculty but among the students and much more broadly, to build a massive resistance urgently to these concentrated and focused attacks of Horowitz and the like, to crush and to extinguish critical thinking and dissent in academia as a crucial part of doing that throughout society as a whole. We should grasp the dialectical materialist basis for correctly acting in terms of the relation between knowing and changing the world, between recognizing and bringing into realization what is in the interest of the overwhelming majority of humanity and ultimately of humanity as a whole and of the individuals who make up humanity. Now, in one section of the Observations book, I talked about when we get to communism. I made the point I was just sort of tripping out. Well, maybe they won't even call it communism then anymore. Maybe the word communism won't have any meaning because things exist in terms of their opposites, and now we're trying to get to something we call communism. But when you're there, then new contradictions will emerge and people will think of it differently. And perhaps, I said there, there won't be one communist ideology. Maybe there'll be different schools of dialectical materialism contending. So this kind of tripping out is useful and helpful to loosen up the mind and to go against dogmatism. And it's part of the overall methodology that we need. But the point is that when we get to communist society, which I expect people will have the basis and the methodology to be even trippier, well, even more consistently scientific at the same time and correctly handle that unity of opposites, if you will. But when we get there, that will be in a whole different context, on a whole different foundation, materially and ideologically. And that's the leap that we have to be aiming for and devoting everything that we're doing to getting to, even though we're not going to see the full realization of that in our lifetimes. We have to be working and bringing forward masses to get as far as we can, as fast as we can, toward that objective at every stage. So this is what we must aim for through all the stages, all the particular focuses and concentration points of the struggle at different times, in striving in immediate terms, historically, to get over the first great hump and seize power, now here, now there, through the revolutionary rising in one form or another of millions and tens of millions, through all the twists and turns of the struggle and all of the complexity that is bound to be involved, through all that, getting to that whole new phase in human history and human relations and in the thinking of human beings, beyond bourgeois right and all relations of exploitation and oppression and profound social inequality or social inequality in general, and the corresponding institutions, culture, and ways of thinking. Getting to a communist world is the prize we must keep our eyes firmly fixed on, and to which we must continually raise our own sights and those of ever-growing ranks of the masses of people and ultimately humanity as a whole.